You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 356 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and join me for the first time since episode 300. It has been a while. The great Robbie Callen. What's up, man?
What's going on? Glad to be back. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. We spent some time over the weekend watching the Atlanta Hawks together with the Phoenix Suns in town. And I wanted to start off with a quick look at the tanking race because you and I had an up-close and personal glance at that on Sunday when the Hawks did not start Kent Bazemore, and it was a pretty spectacularly poor basketball game. It was close. It actually ended up being fun with the Torian Prince game winner, all that fun stuff, but not a great basketball game, and that kind of puts us in the mindset of some tanking talk. So I guess the easiest way to do this is, how worried should Hawks fans be? Because a lot of people were really freaking out after that win especially, and now if you look at the standings, it's obviously been a jumbled mess for a while, but the Hawks are no longer at the very bottom.
Yeah, they are a game and a half out of the bottom spot, tied with Brooklyn / Cleveland and Dallas right now. Phoenix and Memphis are virtually tied. It's weird. I still don't understand how Phoenix has played as many more games as they have than everybody else.
But, I mean, yeah, they've played three more games than Memphis. By the way, Memphis has lost 14 in a row as we speak. Like, they're incredible.
I mean, including to the Suns.
Oh, by the way, as we record this, they're down 19 to the Bulls. So it's going to be 15 in a row.
19 to the Bulls.
Yeah, they're getting housed by the Bulls. Great. It's in Chicago, if that makes you feel
better. I mean, look, they had to put Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez back into the lineup. So, hey now.
Yeah, so
watch out.
Moral of the story, I think the Grizzlies are really, really out here to try and get that top pick. But, I mean, I've been trying to tell people to back off the ledge a little bit. I don't think the Hawks are going to finish with the worst record. I never thought they were going to finish with the worst record at any point this season. And that doesn't mean they can't get lucky and win the lottery. But even if they had the worst record, they have to get lucky and win the lottery, because even the worst record, the thing about the worst record is that your floor is number four, and that is nice. But in terms of getting into the top three, it's going to be a fortunate thing, and hopefully they can still hit there. But I mean, how far can the Hawks rise? I guess they could go a long way here, because they're only a half game ahead of three or four other teams. So there's a lot of flexibility. I guess it's probably why people are a little bit worried.
Yeah, I mean, they could easily fall to seventh, because you're looking at Orlando, Sacramento, and Dallas. Are the three teams? Well, Dallas is tied with them. Orlando and Sacramento are the teams behind them. So yeah, like I think when I wrote about it, I predicted them in like the fifth spot or something like that. Like, I just knew they were going to win some games they shouldn't. Like, that Indiana game was not a game that they should win. There's
such
not
a win.
it's an awful win, and you're just like, man, like, just do anything else, please. Like, don't beat playoff teams. Don't do that. Don't beat playoff teams.
They're just well coached. I mean, that's the thing about this. They're 15-19 at home. They have the best home record of all of these teams. They're awful on the road. They have the worst road record in the entire league, and that's because they lose teams they're supposed to lose to on the road, and they beat teams they're not supposed to beat at home, and because they're a young team that's also well coached. Like, that's kind of what this is.
And there's some home court advantage being in Atlanta, especially when you catch a nice Sunday afternoon game.
And they're also trying. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I know, they rested Bazemore on Sunday. They're going to do some stuff in the last couple of weeks, I'm sure. There'll be some rest games, I'm positive, for some of these guys. But in game, they're trying harder than a lot of these teams are. You can see that with your eyes if you just watch the Hawks play versus, the Grizzlies or something like that. Grizzlies kind of low-key have a non-NBA roster right now. Aside from Gasol, they don't really have many guys. The Hawks, at least on a regular basis, have, seven NBA players on the court. Well, at least on the available roster. Whereas Memphis, you've watched, you know, check out some of those rosters that the Memphis Grizzlies are trotting out in the last couple of weeks. Or, you know, Phoenix has a lot of, actually has more talent than the Hawks, I would certainly argue, but they also have a lot of guys who are 19 and 20 years old, and those guys don't know how to win. So, I mean, we talked about this at the very beginning of the season, but the Hawks did some stuff to go out and be more competitive. And it did, you know, it's kind of maybe going to backfire on them in some ways. Obviously, you know, Ilya Sova's off the roster now, but they still have Dedmon, who is good, that plays a lot. And they didn't gut the roster completely. And that's kind of what you asked for. So, I mean, I guess I can ask you where you think they're going to finish. I know we're all sort of guessing now because it's so crunched up. But are they going to finish in the bottom three, the bottom five, or are they going to be in danger of rising into that seven or eight range? Because at that point, your odds become a lot less favorable.
Yeah, I think they're more likely to land in that five or six range than the two or three range. I mean, I think Phoenix is handily worse than them, as was proven by the fact that they can lose to the Hawks without Ken Bazemore,
who is probably their most indispensable piece. So,
I mean, what, that line moved 2 points off of Kent Bazemore not being in the lineup. I was losing on when you told me that, because, like, Kent Bazemore is a very nice, solid player, but he should not be moving lines 2 points. Star players move lines 2 points. Kent Bazemore on a normal basketball team might move a line half a point. But in that game, he moved it 2 points. Eventually came back up a half point. But, yeah, like, I look at this team and you can see how, like you mentioned, they battled Toronto and fell apart late. They battled the Warriors. They beat the damn Pacers. they beat the damn Pacers. Like, they played too hard and, like you said, are too well coached comparatively to a Phoenix team that is, like, you watch this Phoenix team play basketball, and, like, I don't know what sets they're running. Memphis is a disaster. Like, I think Dallas, and you talk about in-game coaching, like, Rick Carlisle is a good coach, but Dallas does inexplicably bad things at certain times. And Dennis Smith Jr., I think the biggest thing Dallas has going for it, Dennis Smith Jr., bad. When you have a rookie, he's not good.
Yeah.
Like,
I like him. I like him a lot still, but, you know, rookie point guards that have all your usage are not going to go well.
No, I think all the lineups with him in it, the last, like, I did a thing on, I should pull this up. The numbers are going to be dated a bit. But, like, I looked up the worst lineups that every team in these tanking teams have been running out there. Part of the problem is the Hawks can't deploy Marco Bellinelli anymore.
That is a problem.
He was in all of their worst lineups. All the Hawks lineups are, like, fine. Like, this is the problem.
Yes.
Like, all of the Hawks lineups, like, comparatively to the rest of the league, like, they have, like, anytime they can get Torian Prince in the lineup is usually a help for the tank. That's just... The data proves it.
Yep.
But, like, Kent Bazemore, Dwayne Dedmon, Dennis Schroeder, when I did this, were a plus 16.8 net rating in 108 minutes over the last 10 games when I did this. When was this? Like, a week ago? And so it's probably actually gotten worse than that. So, like, yeah, but the Mavs, Dennis Smith Jr. lineups are all at least minus 21.8 in the last 10.
Oh, sweet mercy. I mean, you look at all these Hawks. I'm looking at the lineups now that are, you know, the current data for the Hawks, and all their worst lineups essentially include Bellinelli, and those lineups are not available anymore. You know, their two main lineups, you know, hilariously the worst one that has a ton of usage is Prince and Schroeder, which you would have argued were their two best players coming in the season. A lot of people would have argued that, and those guys – together this season have not had a whole lot of success. And then you have some of the big man lineups are rough, and then everything that included Bellinelli, I was well ahead of that one, talking about how Bellinelli was bad. And the fact that he was off the team was going to hurt them in terms of the lottery position. That has proven to be the case so far. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to go too deep on it, but there's some worry to be had. But it was always going to take luck. That's kind of what I've been telling people over the last couple of weeks, is that, you know, even if they had finished with the worst record, which I never thought was going to happen, they were going to have to get lucky. And you know, that night in mid-May is going to be an interesting one, to be sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like this year, more than any other, like, we have so much to pay attention to across the entire league. Like, usually we come into mid-March and you can just pretty much turn off the NBA for the tournament.
I mean, it's time. Yeah, normally, I candidly usually kind of not all the way tap out, but my NBA consumption certainly dips quite a bit over the next like 2 weeks, as everybody
tremendously,
you know, most people do. I mean, they're the NBA only diehards that just hate college, which I understand. But even those people, like, you're not a huge college basketball guy, but you're going to watch a ton of college basketball in the next 2 weeks. That's just what happens.
Locked in, like, that's what happened. But this year, literally the entire league, there's something interesting to watch, because I'm trying to think of the teams that really, like, because you have the seven tanking teams, or the eight tanking teams, or seven tanking teams and Brooklyn, who can't help themselves because they have a godforsaken roster. Yeah. New York, I think, is too far out.
Yeah, they have 24 wins. If they lose the rest of if they lose every game the rest of the season, they'll still finish outside the bottom three, I think. I mean, I'd be stunned if Memphis or Phoenix got to 24 wins. I would be stunned.
Yeah, that takes some doing. Like, the Knicks are extremely bad at basketball without Kristaps Porzingis, but they won too many games when there was that, oh, could they make the playoffs push in December?
And they still have 15 games left. I don't think they're going to go 0-15. I mean, they've already lost five in a row. Are they really going to lose 20 in a row to end the season? I guess it's conceivable, but unlikely.
Yeah, agree. I think they finished with like 26, 27 wins, which isn't good, but
it's enough.
It's actually like the worst case scenario, because you're sitting there in ninth.
Yep.
But you have those. So you have those eight teams that are really, like, maybe nine if you want to include New York really going for it. But eight teams legitimately in the race. Like, Chicago's 3.5 games out. They're going to be, 4.5 games out when they beat Memphis tonight. So they're going to struggle, but they're still going to be fighting for kind of those middle positions. So you have, like, a really deep tank race. And then you have 3-10 in the West, all within 3 games, 4 games of each other. You have 3-8 in the East, all within 2 or 3 games of each other. The only teams that aren't interesting right now pretty much are Detroit, Charlotte, the Lakers. That's it. Everybody else has things to play for on a nightly basis. Like,
and the Lakers are the Lakers. Their fans are engaged.
They're going to be like, we've won 6 of our last 10. That means LeBron's going to want to come here. Salute to them.
They have billboards. It's happening.
It's just kind of bizarre, because usually we're looking at like three teams fighting for an 8 seed.
And now we're
usually at 7, 8, 9. Now it's like everybody. So really kind of interesting year, even if the top of the conference aren't hugely like up for grabs. Like, obviously in the West it is, but in the East, like, unless Toronto falls apart, I think they'll.
Yeah, Toronto's not falling apart, I don't think. At least in the regular season, they got that pretty much on lock at this point. I do want to ask you, and I guess it's probably a good time to do it since we're already here, about the bottom of the West playoff race, because the Hawks have a rooting interest in the form of the T-Wolves making the playoffs. And, you know, all the systems still like the T-Wolves, but the systems don't know that Jimmy Butler's hurt. And they are not the same team without Jimmy Butler. That's kind of
plummeting.
They are having some issue. I think we got some reaction this morning up here when we wrote our Sam Meredith's doing this daily sort of look at the draft stuff, and that includes Minnesota. And he got some reaction saying that it was now maybe unlikely that even Minnesota holds on to a playoff spot. I wouldn't go that far necessarily, but, you know, I was going to ask you what you think the West is going to look like, because, you know, as crazy as this is, you think it'd be more projectable because these teams are trying, but, you know, they have right now as we speak, between the 3 seed Portland and the 10 seed Utah, there's 4 games. Like, it's so
I can't remember different. Anything like this.
It's nuts, man.
Like, genuinely can't remember a 10-team race like this. And it's funny because early in the year, like, I kind of was joking around because, like, a lot of these teams were just, like, stumbling around. And I was like, yeah, and is the West really that strong? And, like, I think what we're seeing is there's a clear two-team break. And we're kind of used to there being, like, maybe the West, you're talking about four teams, four really good teams. Now you're talking about two elite teams and eight really solid basketball teams below them.
And they're all, like, Portland's playing out of their minds. They've won eight in a row. New Orleans has won nine in a row. Utah has now won four in a row after they won 11 in a row before. And Utah went to Indiana and won by 20 tonight. Like, all these teams, I mean, not all of them. Obviously, Minnesota's struggling, justifiably. San Antonio's struggling. But there's all these teams that you don't think of as being that good that are just playing that well right now. Like, New Orleans is out of their mind.
It's insane. Like, Anthony Davis, he, like, people are like, oh, he deserves MVP consideration. He doesn't because James Harden is the only MVP candidate.
That's over. I mean, short of Harden getting hurt tonight, knock on wood, that's over.
Like, seriously, like, we need to find a different way to praise players for having really good seasons than saying they deserve MVP consideration.
You remember Isaiah Thomas last year, MVP consideration?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Like, what Anthony Davis has been doing for the last month is MVP basketball. If he was averaging 37-15 for the season, yes, he would be an MVP candidate. However, he wasn't doing that for he was a really good player the rest of the time. He was an all-star caliber player, but James Harden is your MVP. We need to be okay with talking about that next tier of guys and saying this dude's having an incredible – because it's okay. Like, I promise it's okay if 10 players have amazing seasons and one just happens to have – a ridiculous one or two or three. Like, it's okay if I don't think Damian Lillard belongs in the MVP race and I don't think Anthony Davis belongs in the MVP race, because there shouldn't be an MVP race because James Harden is the MVP. That's okay. That's not saying Damian Lillard hasn't been amazing. That's not saying he doesn't deserve consideration for second team all NBA. Like, maybe first team. Maybe, if you really want to argue him against Steph, but I don't think you can this year. Like, even that's not as close as people want to make it out to be. He's been great lately. Anthony Davis has been great lately. He should be first team All-NBA. But second team All-NBA is really, really, really good too. 15 guys make those teams. Third team All-NBA is really, really, really good. 15 guys make those teams. It affects those guys' contracts. Like, that's important stuff. That's important. It's okay if they're not all MVP candidates. Back to your initial question,
though. I like that.
I'm sorry. I needed to get that off my chest.
You got it going. It's fine.
I should probably write that.
You should. I'm about to say I won't tell our boss that you had that whole pitch on the podcast. If you don't want to write it, because he'll make you.
I know he will. I'll probably end up writing it. We'll see. But yeah, like, the Blazers and Pelicans playing out of their minds. You wonder how sustainable it is, but they've put themselves in a really good position.
The fact that, like, we're sitting here in, you know, early to mid March, and neither San Antonio nor Minnesota is guaranteed a playoff spot.
No,
like, at all. Like, San Antonio, justifiably so. I mean, they've been playing without Kawhi all season, basically, and LaMarcus has been hurt too. So, like, you saw that roster. That roster has no business being 37-27. But the fact that they're in peril and so is Minnesota is just a reminder of how absurd. I mean, by the way, Oklahoma City's in seventh. That team is supposed to be a 55-win team this year. and they're in seventh.
Right, they are a game and a half out of ninth. Yeah, I mean, look, little plug for my pod, the Dime Pod.
Get it out there.
We had Fred Katz on for this week's episode that'll drop on Thursday morning. And yeah, I mean, we talked about, like, the Thunder have problems. They have legitimate issues. And we talked about their kind of like three phases of the season, the early feel out phase where everybody's like, are they broken? Then their like run of being really good and seeming to have everything click. And then the Robertson injury, And the post Robertson injury has just been a disaster. Like, they're 8-9. They have a 109 defensive rating without Robertson, which is exactly what it was when he was off the court, which is incredible. Like, you would think normally the on-off court splits we look at a lot, but a lot of times you're like, well, that's just kind of different rotations, not usually something you can say, oh, they're going to be this bad without him for an injury. Like, usually it comes a little bit more to the middle. They've literally been that bad without Robertson since he's been out, which is incredible. And it kind of shows how important it was to that team to have two elite wing defenders to make up for the issues Russ has defensively, to make up for the issues Carmelo has defensively. Like, Steven Adams and those wings were what you had as your base. And when you take away a piece of that and the best defensive piece of that, then you find yourself in some real trouble. It would not shock me if Oklahoma City did not make the playoffs in the slightest. What they have to do is keep beating the teams they're supposed to beat. Losing to the Rockets, there's no shame in losing to the Rockets by double digits. The Rockets will beat the hell out of anybody. Yes. Especially if they shoot well. Like, it's going to be a wrap. But they can't lose. What's really going to be interesting is those two early season losses in super close games to the Timberwolves are going to really be tough looking back. Like, a lot of those close games OKC lost early in the season when they just literally could not figure out how to play in a close game in the final 2 minutes, how to score, how to get anything going to the hoop. That stretch where they were like an unfathomably bad, they're like 2-8 in close games or something like that early in the year. That could be the reason they missed the playoffs. And that's pretty incredible. The thing I wonder is if the Clippers have enough juice to make a run.
I think they're the easiest pick to miss.
Yeah,
but you have to come up with two. Like, they're the one that I always start with when I say who's going to miss the playoffs.
Right.
But the second team is the tough one for me.
Second team's tough. Like, the Nuggets are, they've looked good. Like, Jokic has kind of struggled with Millsap coming back in because it's, again, a feeling out process for him on how to play with Paul. But they're still good. Like, losing to the Mavs was really bad. Like, those are games you can't lose if you're Denver. But they've got a soft schedule coming up. Like, listen to this next. Okay, so they have the Cavs tonight. However, after playing Cleveland, listen to this next run of games. Lakers, Kings, Lakers, Pistons, Grizzlies, Heat, Bulls.
Eesh.
Like, they could legitimately, that's seven games, they could very easily go 6-1. Like, maybe they split the Lakers, but the Pistons are not good. Unless they're playing a team on a second game of a back-to-back. That might be my favorite stat in the NBA right now. That they're like 6-7-0 against teams on a second game of a back-to-back with Blake Griffin, and they are winless in any other situation.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's amazing. Like, if they're playing a team that's tired, like, they just beat the crap out. They're the Warriors. But if the team has had any off time, they lose. Doesn't seem possible.
No, it
doesn't. Anyway, Denver, and they could make a run here. Yeah. And then they have like a brutal stretch, but that's kind of how the NBA works. But they're really, like, it's hard to pick a team that's going to miss the playoffs in the West. Like, if I had to go anywhere,
I'm going to make you pick it. So
just, I know you're going to make me pick it. I'm just hedging really hard. I want to know when Kawhi is coming back and whether he's going to be okay, because my sneaky pick is the Spurs.
I mean, if you told me he misses 2 or 3 more weeks, then yes.
Like,
if he's back in 4 days, no. But I mean, correct. It's not. I mean, if you look at their peripherals are better than better than New Orleans and Denver, but with LaMarcus not being fully healthy either necessarily,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you. I mean, they do have the two-game lead on Denver, which matters. I think at the end of the day, I'm going to probably pick, I think, Minnesota and the Clippers.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn between San Antonio and Minnesota.
Which is bad. I mean, this is a whole separate conversation we don't have to get into, whether it's better for the Hawks to have that pick roll over or stay. Because that's sort of a draft issue. It's sort of a draft question. Like, you know,
Do you love the 17th pick?
And I mean, the thing is, you get the pick whenever they make the playoffs. If they make the playoffs over the next 3 years once, which we are going to assume they're going to do at some point, you get the pick whenever it first happens. I mean, in an ideal world, you want the Wolves to finish eighth in the
right.
West. I mean, that's
obvious. I was about to say, I think the situation for Hawks is really, I think you want the pick this year. I think this year is going to be the year Minnesota finishes the worst because of the Jimmy thing. Because Jimmy's going to be out for the next another month and a quarter.
They have 16 games left. They probably have to win at least 7. I would say probably 8 to get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem like a lot, but like I'm not sure they are better than a 500 team without Jimmy Butler.
They're 4-6 in their last 10.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously like not a huge sample, but with the way this team is constructed, they don't play defense without a new Jimmy Butler. That's kind of the thing. It's not the offense, they're going to score. It's just the defense.
Oh, yeah.
They can't stop anybody.
No, they're extremely bad without Jimmy Butler. On the defensive end, they don't like they're getting cooked by Utah, which is not a good sign. Like Utah's fine offensively, but you can't be getting like scored on by Utah.
No.
So
are you going with San Antonio or Minnesota or both?
I'm gonna go with the Clippers and I think Kawhi comes back soon.
Yep, me too.
I'm gonna say Kawhi comes back next week.
Could be the Nuggets.
I think it's the Wolves, man.
I mean, it could be. By the way, the funny thing is the Jazz are currently in 10th, and
they're tied for ninth,
but winning percentage wise, they're in 10th.
Winning percentage wise,
we haven't even considered them. I'm not even, with the way they're playing, they're getting in. Unless something weird happens,
so good. Yeah, like as long as everybody's healthy, they're like exceedingly good at basketball. Like Donovan Mitchell's a monster, and like they just have Quinn Snyder's a very good basketball coach.
Hawks legend.
So that's my take.
I like it
on the West. I don't feel super duper confident in it. Again, like
you shouldn't.
This is one of those like predicting this is set out to make you look dumb because like I could easily see like New Orleans missing, like New Orleans just all of a sudden is like, oh wait, we're not this good.
I mean, they're gonna cool off, and or Davis will get hurt and miss 5 games, which they can't afford. Right. Like he's got to play every game or they're in trouble. Yeah. I mean, we could do this all day, but yeah, it's the moral of the story is the Wolves have some work to do from a Hawks perspective. It's going to be very interesting.
100%.
All right, let's do a couple of Hawks things before I let you get out of here. The first one being the thing that I have to ask everybody about, and that is John Collins. You actually talked to him not long ago, so I wanted to see your reaction to him up close and personal and just kind of where you see him as a player right now, because I mean, people got some blowback. There was an ESPN list of the best 25 under 25 today that he didn't make, which wasn't like offensive or anything. There was a couple guys that I would certainly have him ahead of that were on the list, and Kevin Pelton put him on his individual list. But I mean, I'm not angry about that. Just kind of one of those things that gets out there for the fans. I did write it up on purpose to see what the fan reaction would be, but I don't know. Where are we at on John right now?
First off, like I was sitting down with him for 20 minutes at All-Star he was a lot of fun to talk to. I was able to give him some veteran advice about All-Star weekend, which is important. Got to teach the youth some things, when you've done it for 5 years, mainly about packing an extra suitcase because you just get given things that you can't take back. He was like, "Yo, I have so much stuff," and I was like, "Yeah, man, like you gotta check an extra suitcase with you." And he's like, "Man, that's so good." I was like, "I told you, like this is years of experience." You just get like brands just hand you bags of stuff. At all, especially if you're hashtag brand. Shout out to the brands. Love my brands. But yeah, he was great. He was, he seems like a genuinely like nice dude. You know, like all the things I'm sure anybody has said about John Collins being a, nice person to talk to. Fun person that could just kind of like hang out and shoot the shit with a little bit. And, you know, he had some interesting like thoughts on his game and where he wants to go with that I thought were, you know, like good thoughts. You know, he knows he needs to become a better perimeter shooter to kind of be able to stay on the floor and to be an effective offensive player in the league, at the position he's going to play. And, he also knows he's got to get better defending on the perimeter to stay on the floor and be able to play in crucial crunch time minutes. Like basically the opposite of what we learned with Dwight Howard last year, where he was unplayable in the postseason because he couldn't do those things. So it's good to like hear him say those things and acknowledge the weaknesses in his game he has to work on. And like, he seems like the kind of kid that's going to be in the gym and put in that work. And already his baseline right now is he can be a bench guy that gives you a solid 20 minutes a game. Like what he is now is that, you know, solid 15, 20. If he never really grew exponentially, which again, like some young guys don't, some young guys are just what they are. But hopefully you can work on his game and add those things. But on the court, like that's what I see. Like he's a role guy. I don't know if he's ever going to be I don't think he's ever going to be a foundational piece in the sense that you're building around him at all. He's a guy that like you're not going to worry about. So for instance, like coming into next year's draft, they should not be worried about drafting a DeAndre Ayton because they have John Collins already. Or, you know, like you don't worry about that. He might not be a starter. And that's okay. We have to remember where he was taking. He's taking, what, 19th? Like
19.
If you take somebody 19th and they become a solid role player, that is a win. That is a huge win. Think of every Hawks draft pick that's been in the like early 20s that has not been that. Okay? Like, for every John Collins, there is a John Jenkins. Or three. Or four.
Yes.
Or five. Like, it's really hard to nail the middle to back end of the draft because you kind of have two types of players. You have the more experienced guys that don't have a high ceiling, and you're hoping that their college skills translate to the NBA, which is safer, but not a lock. Like you know, that's essentially what John Jenkins was like, they thought, okay, like he's a shooter, he's a floor spacer, this is a thing we need. They didn't really account for the fact that he was just not really able to get his shot off consistently and wasn't able to create for himself consistently. And he wasn't a plus defender by any stretch. So Collins, you came in, you knew he had some defensive issues, but you hoped he can still be a rebounder. He can be an energy guy, a guy with bounce, and like you can kind of teach him the parts of the game you need to, like defense. And I think to this point, that's been a success. I think people take it way too far with these young guys, especially guys that aren't top picks. Like it's all right if he is never more than a sixth man, because you need those guys on your team. Like you have to have solid bench guys on your team. And if that's all he is, that's fine. Like if he's a starter, that's a huge win. And I don't know if he's going to be that, but I do think he's a guy you want on your basketball team, which at 19 is a win. That's a win. It's okay to have that as the reality.
Yeah. I think that's it's all fair. I would say, I mean, I think it's funny. I feel like I'm probably lower on him than some Hawks fans, because that's just what happens.
Right.
The fan base gets really excited, and but I think I'm also almost higher on him than the national consensus would be. So it's kind of that weird thing where, to be frank with people, not everybody's watching the Hawks. They're one of those, you could definitely tell the national guys who have seen the Hawks regularly and the guys who have not. There's that interesting dichotomy where you can certainly pick that out if you look close enough. And I think the people that have seen him a lot are impressed, and he's been very
Honestly,
good.
the best question to ask somebody to see if they've watched the Hawks is ask them about Dennis.
Which is what I wanted to finish with. So let's just do that now too. I mean, you started it. So Dennis has been interesting this year. I think if you, again, it's the same thing we talked about before, but his raw numbers are fine. His counting numbers, but if you look beyond that, he's not been great necessarily.
No, he's been outright bad at times. Like, just
Yes.
he's he has he ha I feel I have no qualm saying he has regressed in a bigger role. He has taken a step back, and that happens sometimes. Like, you gave him a higher usage rate than he probably should have on a team.
It's currently, by the way, 30.2%, which, let me find it. I had this earlier in usage rate. I think he's like in the top 10 of the league. I'm looking that up as we talk, so you can continue,
It's
but.
not, it's that's not what you want. Yeah, like, he's regressed. Like, you can see it. A part of it, and this is something that happens, and it's not to say that Dennis can't get back to what made him an intriguing prospect, an intriguing young player, made him the guy that the Hawks were willing to part ways with Jeff Teague to kind of hand him the reins as the starter. It's not to say he can't get back to that, but he has certainly taken steps back.
By the
That he
way,
will have to take steps forward. Talk to me.
he's 14th in usage rate.
Sweet
These
Jesus.
are the players that have a higher usage rate than Dennis Schroeder: James Harden, Russell
Mm-hmm.
Westbrook, Joel Embiid, DeMarcus Cousins, Devin Booker, D'Angelo Russell, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kyrie Irving, Chris Porzingis, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Victor Oladipo, and Dame Lillard. He has a higher usage rate than DeMar DeRozan, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, John Wall, Blake Griffin, Donovan Mitchell. I'm just picking out good players. Kemba Walker.
That's insane that he has a higher usage than Kemba.
There's a lot of people that he has hired. Paul George, by the way, by a lot. So yeah, I mean,
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
that's a Russ
Anybody on
thing.
the Warriors, Thunder, not Russ, not
Yes,
surprised.
but it's just kind of
All
wild
right.
to consider, like, that's how you end up with a guy who averages 19 and 6, who we don't think is playing very well, is because he is has a 30% usage rate. That's what happens.
Right, he is averaging a usage rate that you want a guy to be putting up like a reasonably efficient 24 and like 8. Like,
Well,
you know?
I said this offline because I was sort of in fear of what the reaction would be. But I think I was looking at the standings the other day, the stats the other day with our good friend Jeff Siegel, and I said, is Dennis Schroeder the worst player in the NBA that's averaging at least 19 points a game? And I think the answer is yes. The only competition for him in this regard was TJ Warren, who then
Oh yeah, we
promptly had
talked
like
about this.
35 against the Hawks.
Beat the
But
hell out of the Hawks.
yeah.
It's TJ. How much TJ Warren plays is hysterical to
It is
me.
funny.
By the way, he plays like 40 minutes a night.
He played
It's
42 minutes in
true.
that Hawks game on Sunday.
I mean, they ride TJ Warren into the ground. Salute TJ Warren. He's played more minutes than anybody on that Suns team by a very healthy margin because Booker's missed games. Like, when Booker is out, they're just like, TJ, you're gonna shoot 26 times. Yeah, so no, you're 100% right. And again, like, the problem is Dennis has given zero effort on defense on a regular basis, but so is like 90% of the Hawks team. So you can kind of say, well, you know, like, he's on it, like, if the team doesn't care, then like, who cares if he doesn't? But like, his job is to kind of set the tone on that end of the floor. And if he's not doing that, then that's how you end up with Torian Prince not carrying on defense. That's how you end, you know, like, if you don't have your top guys leading the way in that for a young team, everybody follows suit. So if he's doing lazy stuff on defense, like trying to do the stupid Jeff Teague poke from behind move, like, and letting people drive by him because he might get an extra steal that way, then other guys are going to do that. If he's not, you know, if he's not fighting through screens, if he's doing that, and then on offense, it's a disaster. He just will try to do everything himself. And that is also a matter of trusting the guys around you, which it's understandable why he might not. However, when you are the point guard of a team like this, at some point you just, like, you have to recognize, like, you're not going to do it yourself. You know, like.
No, and we saw, I mean, we saw him in a, granted, you had Paul Millsap, but it was a similar offensive role last year because of the fact that, you know, he had to engineer a lot of the offense. You know, his usage wasn't quite this high. It was about 28% last year, up to 30% this year. But he was more efficient last year. And all season long, I was giving him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because he had to carry so much of a load. I was like, oh, well, maybe he'll be more efficient when he's not having to carry so much of a load. And granted, it's not like the load went down, but his efficiency has actually gone down. He's back to 51% true shooting, which isn't like a disaster, but that's what he is now. His career, you know, this is now four consecutive years since he's become a full-time guy. And over those 4 years, 51%, 51%, 53%, 51%. And true shooting, that's just what he is, and that's just not efficient enough to be a primary or even close to a primary option. It's just not.
No, and it's because he puts his head down and he decides he's going to do it himself. He takes awful shots all over the floor. Like, he's an equal opportunity bad shot taker. Like, he will pull bad three-pointers, he will take bad mid-range shots, and he will take bad looks at the rim. And not all shot attempts are created equal, and he proves that because night in, night out, he takes bad shots a lot. And look, again, like, this isn't to say in a better situation with better players around him, he can't be a solid basketball player, but I think what we're learning about Dennis, and look, I've always liked Dennis. I've always liked the idea of Dennis on the court, and I've always liked Dennis off of the court. In my interactions with him, but like, it's one of those things where you watch him play and you just have to go, like, this, like you said, this is who he is. If you give him this much load, like, maybe he would be a guy that could give it to you in bursts with a second unit. Or because, like, I don't, would he be willing to accept a lesser role as a starting point guard with better players around him? I don't know. He's always been a supremely confident individual in himself. So it's kind of a fascinating thing with him. And there's going to be some questions for Schlenk moving forward this summer as to whether this is the guy he wants running this team as they do this rebuild, because it's not going to get a whole lot better around him quickly. And so do you want this to be the environment that you're putting the young guys into, where you have a point guard that is not exactly facilitating growth per se in your young players offensively, because he has a tendency to throw his head down and say, I'm going to do this, but he is not skilled enough to do so efficiently or effectively.
My thing is, even if you actually really like Dennis as a player, I think it's pretty fair to grant the fact that it would be hard to build a contending team around him as a starting point guard. That's where I am with it. Like, even if you really like Dennis more than I do, or think he's better than I think he is, I just don't see the path to him being, you know, point guard is just so important. Like, you need a guy that does things. Either if you have a guy who plays the way Dennis plays, he has to be better than Dennis. Or you need a guy who plays differently, if that makes sense. Like, he has to either be a supporting piece, or you have to be awesome, and he's neither of those things. Like, so far, maybe, and that's the sort of the only optimistic thing what I could say about it is that, you know, maybe if you give a guy to Dennis that's like an actual primary guy on the wing, maybe he would become the, you know, grinder defense first and be more efficient kind of player that we all actually thought he might be a couple years ago.
Right.
But until then, you just can't assume that at all. And he's not like, he's not that young anymore. Like, he'll be 25 in September, which isn't crazy old, but like normally you kind of are what you are by then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of funny. Like, remember when all the comparisons were to Rondo?
Well, I mean, they were lazy, but yes.
I mean they were lazy, but like, yeah, like all the comparisons were and like he play anything.
No, he made his bones when he first came off the bench, and he was, you know, playing pressure defense and was like known for his length. And you know, as a prospect, you could see why he was considered to be this really interesting defensive prospect. And I do think he would be better if he had a smaller role offensively. But even 2 years ago, his last year when he wasn't a starter, I don't think he was some great defensive player. Like, he was okay, but he was still an offense first guy off the bench. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be, at best, he might be passable defensively.
Yeah. Like, which is, it's one of those frustrating things where you go, like, you can see the potential in him, but if that's not where his focus is going to be, then, you know, like he had, like, the thing that's most frustrating is when you see him, like, I remember, like you mentioned, like when he first came in the league, like he flew around and like, you get frustrated because you'd see the way he would fight through screens and slip under them and around them. And you go, man, like, why can't Jeff Teague do that? And now it's like, man, why can't Dennis do that again?
That's an effort thing. Yeah. I would kill for Jeff Teague level defense from Dennis Schroeder right now.
Yeah.
Maybe not Teague now, but like Teague in Atlanta the last couple of years when he was just okay on defense and didn't get you killed. That would be a big upgrade to where Dennis has been the last 2 years. As weird as that is.
Yeah. And again, like, I think it might be a situation where it's mutually beneficial for the Hawks and Dennis to part ways, because I don't think Dennis will get better in the situations he will be put in over the next couple of years with the Hawks in a rebuild, because he's going to have the same role over and over. And I think the best chance for him to get back into being a positive NBA player is to go somewhere where he isn't that top guy, that primary guy, and if he's willing to accept that. I think that's what you're looking at, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he got moved at some point over the next 365 days till next year's trade deadline or whatever.
Oh, I'd be pretty surprised if he was on the team. I think people are assuming he'll be gone this summer. I wouldn't go that far, but I think between this summer and, as you mentioned, you know, mid-February of next year, I think he will be gone.
Because like, it might be a situation where they're like, you know, they might hope that his value comes up if he plays a little better early next season. They can pull the trigger in December or January.
Well, and he's not Schlenk's guy. I mean, Schlenk didn't draft him, and Schlenk didn't pay him. Not always. I mean, there's no rule against the GM coming in and liking a guy that's currently on the roster, but we don't know that to be true. And going back to what I said before, like, you have to, if you're Travis Schlenk, your mold is to build a contender long term. And it's harder to build a contender when you have a guy that plays like Dennis plays at point guard that isn't good enough to play that way. It's just hard. And that's not a shot. I mean, Dennis is a starting point guard in the NBA. Like, that's not a shot at Dennis necessarily. I think he'll be a starter wherever he goes. It's just, he's never going to be a better than average starter. That's his ceiling.
Right. But there's a lot of good point guards in the league, and
point guard is flush, man. Like, they're guys who can't get jobs. Like, Jeremy Lin couldn't get a starting point guard job, and we were like, oh, he's really good. It's like, yeah, he can't get a job. Like, Elfrid Payton may not have a job. Like, the jury's out on him, but like, I bet you if you polled 10 people around the league, half of them would like Elfrid Payton more than Dennis Schroeder.
That's probably true.
I mean, it would definitely be split in some way. And I think Elfrid Payton is a guy who probably won't be a starting point guard in the NBA. I think Dennis is better than him, to be honest with you. But I think the days of him averaging 19 points a game in the NBA are probably not going to be happening after this year.
No, they're limited. I hope 30% usage. That's a lot. I don't want this to come off as like me like trashing Dennis.
Oh, for sure.
He's not been good. I want Dennis to be in a better position for himself. I want Dennis to succeed. I hope he can get back to being the guy we thought he could be, if that makes sense. But I don't think it's in Atlanta, and I don't think it's in the situation Atlanta's in. Like, I think he needs to go to a more established team. Like, he's definitely not the ideal fit the Bucks should be going for, but there are those like fluttering rumors that the Hawks were getting something like that Bledsoe deal offered for him. And like, I could see Dennis being much better on the Bucks than he is in Atlanta, because he would definitely not be the guy in Milwaukee. Like, there would be no illusions about that.
No, he'd be better a lot of places when he was the number one option. I do believe that. Just, you know, how much better is up for debate, but
sure.
I think him being a primary option has not done him any favors, and that is not his fault. It's all, you know, context is important, as we always say.
100%. Those are lengthy Dennis thoughts.
That's what we do on this podcast, lengthy thoughts. Well, thank you, sir. You've given me too much time, as you are wont to do. But please plug your pod and everything else you'd like to plug. I think you already talked about it, but you can say it again. Maybe people will get some subscribers and some reviewers and raters and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, buddy. Smash those subscribe buttons, those review stars for the Dime Podcast. We have illustrious guests each and every week. Well, some weeks more so than others. But
I say, at some point, the Hawks will be relevant enough for me to make an appearance on that podcast.
It's going to happen. One day.
2022, I will make
an appearance. 2022, when the Hawks are – when the defensive player of the year, Jaren Jackson, for the 8th straight year.
Oh, I love this.
4th straight year, has led the Hawks to a conference finals.
You don't have to say anything else to me. I like Jaren Jackson.
No, Jaren Jackson, strong basketball player, going to infuriate Hawks fans when they take him 5th.
Oh, that's going to happen. And by the way, your next appearance is going to be a post-NCAA tournament Robbie's College Basketball Thoughts podcast. So,
I will come with takes. I already promised Harper I would go on his podcast and do an exclusive. I would take his big board and watch exclusively 1 minute of highlights on each player and just fire off takes.
Is that before or after your Hurricane Heist podcast?
That'll be after.
Okay, just want to check.
I think that'll be that'll be after. But anyway, subscribe to the Dime Podcast. We had Lang Whitaker on last week.
Atlanta's own Lang Whitaker.
Atlanta legend. We talked a little Atlanta food. That's a tease right there in the business. We had Fred Katz on this week. He told Steven Adams at the zoo stories. Should be an auto listen.
Absolutely.
We got some fun ones coming up. So subscribe. You can catch me over at UpRocks doing all manner of things. A lot of Dime Mag. Occasionally writing about Tiger Woods when they allow me. It's good times. I'll be writing about Vegas soon. So that's for the people.
Oh, yeah. Check out that for sure. And obviously, I think everybody that listens to this podcast is following you on Twitter. But if you're not, at our calendar, I must follow on the old Twitter machine.
Can't wait for NCAA tournament takes. I'm ready.
It is your specialty, after all. I've seen this up close and personal. You are a college basketball diehard, so I'm looking forward to that. Well, thank you, sir, for all the time. And as he said, subscribe to the Dime Pod. Check out Robbie's work and my work occasionally on the on Dime Mag, mock drafts. And
Brad with the mock draft.
Mock drafts, great power rankings.
You do a great job with that, by the way.
Thank you.
Great job. I love the mock drafts. I get to edit power rankings each week. That's always a treat.
it's certainly something that we get to do together, you and I. So,
it's teamwork. If there's ever a mistake in there, you can always blame me, because I didn't catch it, but I try.
That's a good look behind the curtain of us on early on Tuesday mornings.
That's right.
So, All right, man, I'm letting you get out of here, but I appreciate it. And as for everybody else, we'll be back again later in the week with something having to do with the Atlanta Hawks. So stay tuned for that.